Thank you for listening to the 10th and Broad Church of Christ podcast. Larry Suttle, the preaching minister of over 20 years, weekly instructs and encourages those attending the services at the 10th and Broad Church of Christ in Wichita Falls, Texas. Let's join Larry now for this week's lesson.
Well, how's your wheat looking this morning? I have lived and grown up in farm country. I have worked with farming congregations. And so it's a very common phrase for me to hear or say, well, how's the wheat looking? In spite of the fact I am a city boy, I grew up in a city, I have no boots, I have no hat, but still, God has placed me in farming country. I respect farmers a great deal. I tell you, the skills involved with farming is just amazing what these guys have to know to be a farmer. They have to have, of course, obviously agricultural skills. They have to have mechanical skills. They have to have veterinarian skills, business skills. They are dependent on forces beyond their control, weather, government, market, all of these things they can pour their hearts and souls into, and yet they just have to give it all up to things that who knows what's going to happen. And one thing that preachers and farmers have in common, their work, the quality of their work is on public display. Everybody that drives by can see if those rows are straight. And just like people, you know, you can tell if I've studied or not, or if I know what I'm talking about. And it's so I can just relate to a farmer in so many ways. Well, let me give you this simple word picture this morning. An ancient farmer, he's not on a John Deere tractor, but an ancient farmer walks down the furrows of a newly plowed field. And he reaches into his seed bag and he grabs a fistful of seed. And consciously or unconsciously, he makes an instant decision. Is he going to tighten his fingers and throw out the seed sparingly, or is he going to just let it fly? What's he going to do? Big decision. Big decision. Now, if he decides to hold back, now keep in mind, he's just a regular guy. I mean, there's not a evil, stingy bone in his body. He's just a good, old, hardworking farmer. And he hadn't thought about it. He hadn't calculated, really. It's just an instantaneous decision. But if he decides to hold back on that seed a little, what made him do it? Well, I guess one thing would be that he would think there might not be enough seed left at the end of the row. So he might ought to kind of hold back a little. Or that seed is so expensive, he doesn't want to waste the least bit of it. And so he holds back a little. Or he knows the quality of the soil. It's just not the best soil in the world. And so he holds back a little. Or it's been an awful dry season. What about the upcoming rains? Is there going to be enough rain? And so, is it worth throwing out all that seed? On the other hand, there's another farmer, or maybe it's the same farmer, and he decides just to kind of let that seed go. What's his mental process? Well, he knows that soil pretty well, pretty good soil. Through the years, he's had some pretty good crops on that soil. Or by nature, he's just kind of an optimistic fella, so he lets it go. That fistful of seed, he just opens up and throws it out there. Or he's confident of the weather patterns. Or he's read the almanac. You know, I read the other day where the farmer's almanac was more accurate than the National Weather Service on this last winter spells we've been having. That's what it said. So maybe he's read the farmer's almanac and he's pretty confident that we're going to have some rain. Or he just has some ultimate trust in the God of nature. No, it's not Mother Nature, whoever she is. He just has ultimate confidence in the God of nature. And so he just ultimately anticipates things are going to work out. If not this year, it's kind of like the stock market. You know, the stock market guys say, okay, it may go down this time, but it'll come up and it may go down. But if you stay with it, if you stay in the market over the long haul, leave your money in, it's gonna climb ultimately. Don't be one of those people who, you know, is knee-jerk. Stay in it and it'll climb. So this farmer says, I'm going to stay with it. This may be the year. I'm going to let that seed fly. And so he just lavishes the soil with seed and sort of throws caution to the wind. Well, Paul in 2 Corinthians 9, verses 5 through 8, compares these perspectives, these two kinds of farmers, with the fundamental, quintessential statement on Christian giving. I mean, this is the passage, in my judgment, where it's all wrapped up on Christian giving in the New Testament. 2 Corinthians 9, 5 through 8. I hope you're there. It'll not be back here because I want you to turn there and read along with me. There's a Bible near where you're sitting if you didn't bring one of your own this morning. It is so typically Pauline, as the scholar would say. This is so typically Paul. He calls people to their best selves. He reminds people in so typical Paul fashion. He reminds them of things they need reminded of that they may have forgotten. He says, so I thought it necessary to urge the brothers, that is, the men who will be coming soon to pick up the gift. So I thought it necessary to urge the brothers to visit you in advance and finish the arrangements for the generous gift. I want you to notice how often he uses the word generous. He could have left it out and just referred to the gift, but no, Paul plants that seed, if you will, that adjective generous many times. to finish the arrangements for the generous gift you had promised. Remember? You'd promised. Don't forget your promise. You know, you promised it. You remember you promised. Remember that generous gift you promised? Remember you promised it. Oh, Paul does that a lot. He calls people to their higher self. Otherwise, they may have forgotten their promise. Then it will be ready. I know it'll be ready. As a generous gift. Remember that generous gift you promised? You know, it's easy to promise, but sometimes we forget it, don't we? Paul don't want them to forget it. You know that generous gift you promised? Then it will be ready as a generous gift, not as one grudgingly given. A gift? A generous gift? Grudgingly given? Can a gift be grudgingly given? Oh, yes. We give gifts grudgingly. Can a generous gift be given grudgingly? Oh, it's harder. But I suppose it can be. But probably not. But God doesn't want a gift grudgingly given. Remember this. Oh, here's another reminder. We need to be reminded, don't we? These folks knew all of this because they had made a pledge before, obviously. But Paul wants them to be reminded. Remember this. Whoever sows sparingly will also reap sparingly. And whoever sows generously will also reap generously. That's just an old rule of farming. Surely they knew that. But they needed reminding, didn't they? Each man should give what he has decided in his heart to give. Not reluctantly or under compulsion. For God loves a cheerful giver. Don't let anybody compel you to give. If you feel under compulsion to give by this congregation, by the preacher, by the elders, just politely say no thank you and don't give. It's between you and God. Don't ever give under compulsion. It won't do you any good. And this congregation doesn't need your money that bad. And certainly, God doesn't need your money at all. God loves a cheerful giver. I wrote out my check this morning, and I offered thanks like I do for my food. I'm thankful to God. I'm able to give. If you don't do that, then don't give. I haven't always done that. Don't think I'm a goody two-shoes. But at this point in my life, I'm able to do that. But if you've not reached that point, then don't bother. God doesn't need it. We don't either. But remember this, verse 8. God is able. God is able. Is this the verse that the songwriter got his idea of he is able? I don't know. I love that song. He is able. He is able. He is able. Whether it is or not, Paul says, and God is able to make all grace abound to you, so that in all things, at all times, having all that you need. How often does he use the word all in that statement? You will abound in every good work. Is God going to leave you high and dry if you are a cheerful giver? Will you regret being a cheerful giver? Will you regret taking a tenth from the top, as we talked about last Sunday? Not if Paul is correct. God is able to make all grace abound to you, so that in all things, at all times, having all that you need, you will abound in every good work. Great giving invites great harvest. That's what Paul is saying. Cautious, reluctant, grudging giving equals meager crops. But you know, here's an interesting thing too about a farmer. A farmer just doesn't feed himself with his crops. America has been called the breadbasket of the world. And certain areas of our country, certain areas of Texas, certain areas of California have been called the breadbasket of America. Sadly, many of those areas are in drought right now. Don't know what God has in mind about that, but I guess we'll find out. A farmer feeds not only himself, he feeds others. And you'll see trucks full of grain, even here in this country, heading for Houston, where they will go, put on ships, heading all over the world. Grain that is cut in Oklahoma and Texas will head all over the world. And you see, that's the way the Christian harvest is as well. Our wheat is not just for selfish purposes. Our harvest changes lives everywhere. Your decision in regard to your harvest affects lives. Our decision in regard to our giving means lives are bought back from the evil one. Lives are snatched from the cycle of poverty and ignorance, abuse, oppression, and disease. When you put that money in the plate or click that online giving, which is done more and more in our time, it seems so easy and so impersonal in many ways, but it's not. It does something. Churches are established. Mission work is done. Christ is held up in the community in ways that you don't even realize. Youth programs are conducted. Children are trained. Experiences are shared that are remembered for a lifetime. You remember as adults and older young people things that you experienced at church that have shaped you as a child. How was that possible? Because people shared their harvests. They sowed their seed. Loved ones were helped through crises, maybe of health or job loss. Things not advertised because it's not appropriate to advertise them. But real people are affected as your seed is sown and your harvest is felt by real people. The kingdom of heaven is expanded here and around the world. I know sometimes it seems futile. Less important things demand priorities. I know for the farmer, and I'm using that analogy for us, lesser important things seem to take priority. You get to thinking, well, the old barn's falling down. I need to paint the barn. The tractor needs some attention. Various things around the house need repair. But folks, to carry out this analogy, farmers are farmers. As farmers, what we do is sow seed. We don't paint barns. Oh yeah, I know the barns need attention. But by definition, farmers farm, we plant seeds. That's what we do. We grow things. The essence of farming is planting and sowing. The only question is, do we sow sparingly or do we sow abundantly? And the real question is, do we sow according to what we see? And if we do that, sometimes we will sow sparingly. Or do we sow in accordance of what we know about God and His promises, and thus sow in faith and trust in God? That's the question. And we mustn't allow lesser priority things to take over. There remains those who continue to reach into their seed bags and throw out seed with a certain reckless generosity, knowing that with God, the soil is always good, the climate is always perfect, and the giver of the increase is always faithful. So how's your wheat looking? How's your wheat looking?